a system you can handle the heat.
Hear me now. What's up, boys? Today we're going to be talking about a lot of things. We're going to be talking about how much money does a professional volleyball player make coming out of college, solidified volleyball player, and the different leagues and how much they pay. We're also going to be talking about how people deal with losses, failures, how we deal with them, and how to kind of grow as a person, as a player. Joe, Micah, how's it?
So,
how are we doing, people? Back at it. I think Micah's back now, too, after a little small pot. The week break, really, I think.
Well, we don't have a game this weekend, too. But so we are going to – we have 2 weekends off. But France's numbers are way up. When we went into the lockdown, we were at like 45,000 cases a day. And now we're at like 85,000.
So what did the week off – what was the intention of taking 1 week off?
Dude, I have no idea. I've convinced some people. I think people are starting to come around. I think a while ago people were all about the lockdowns and were not really open to even listening to the fact that it maybe is not a good idea. But
lockdown is a good idea?
Yeah. And recently I've been talking to a lot of people that normally have been on the side of lockdowns, and they're like, hey, man, I kind of agree with you. Like, because my point is just like, what happened to just freedom of choice? Like, if you have, you get to weigh your cons and pros and make a decision for yourself. If you're a single mother and you own a business or a restaurant and you're not making ends meet, then you should be able to choose. I'm okay getting sick. I'm going to keep my restaurant open, and whoever wants to come eat here should be able to go in there and eat. And maybe she can choose to say, you need a mask or you need the social distance. But she gets to choose. And the woman who is 45 and lives with her parents still and they have underlying conditions gets to choose to not go out and gets to weigh her pros and cons and be like, hey, we're personally not going to go out because we're dealing with this, and so we don't want to get sick. And we're going to wear a mask when we go out, and we're going to sanitize and like cover all the bases. But the government doesn't get to say to every single person, it can't leave your house. Like, when did we get into that position? What happened to being able to choose for yourself, especially in America?
In Germany and France, do you guys have like food delivery systems where you guys can like get food like accessible?
I think
as
Uber
America?
Eats is still going.
How do you guys get food then if you have to be in lockdown?
No, you can go to the grocery store. Technically, you have to fill out this form. Right. Like, we have a paper that says we're allowed to go to practice. So, like, if a cop pulls us over, we're like, show them the paper, apparently. And you're supposed to fill out this form to go to the grocery store. But I've gone twice, and I haven't filled it out. I'm like, if they pull me over, I'm just going to – I don't speak French. I don't know what's going on.
Well, Joe speaks German, so he's good to go.
Yeah, German's a lot easier than English to learn, so Joe picked it up in, 2 weeks? Just fluent.
I was just saying, the wild thing is that some of these countries think, like, locking things down for a week or two is going to do something. And I'm like, bro, like, 1 week lockdown is not going to do anything. Like, you guys.
No, it's supposed to be for a month. I will say, it's supposed to be for a month. But even then, it's like the cases have gone up. I mean, dude, I was talking to my sister, and it's like people also have really, really bad situations at home. And like leaving home is like what they like look forward to. And they're at home with, in this case, parents that can be abusive and stuff like that. And you're just like, you don't get to make these kinds of decisions for every single person. I get it in the beginning when you don't know what's coming and it looks like millions of people are going to die. Sure. Let's figure it out and be cautious. But it's been 8 months, dude. You don't get to do that for 8 months.
At this point, you have to learn to live sort of like with the virus more so than just avoiding
for
things.
Sure. And like people get to choose it, like how they weigh their own pros and cons. Like, a 20-year-old's most likely not going to die from this thing. Like, you have just the same amount of chance to die from getting a flu than getting this thing. If you're, like, a 20-year-old normal person. So, why can that person have to stop their entire life you look at it in terms of like Stanford men's volleyball or like something like that. It's like there's a lot of stuff going on that happens because of this. And a lot of people have made a lot of sacrifices. And for the people that are underlying or that are over 70, like, and now it's, I think, time to kind of say, okay, we need to be smart about that. And obviously don't go into an old folks home without a mask and go in and dapping everyone up.
But, what's up, Grammy?
You know, like, what's up? Spitting on your hand.
What's going on, kid?
But, like, be smart about it and respect people. Like, when I was in contact with somebody that had it, I was like, man, I really don't want to get anyone sick. So I just, like, I wouldn't come close to people. I wore a mask everywhere. I try not to touch things and be respectful. But come on now.
Well, good news on that is the vaccine. I don't know if this is true. 90% effective. I think that they're trying to get it to, 164 people for effective, or 124 for effectiveness. I think they got 90, or basically they want 124 people to get sick, but 90 of them gotten sick from the placebo. Yeah, it's a long story. I'm kind of confusing it. Basically,
it's a discussion. I have a viewpoint on that too, but let's get to the
main. Let's get involved. Well,
I want to hear a summary of the
viewpoint. That's really a rabbit quickly. Hole, Micah.
Really?
That's quickly. A rabbit hole. That's not.
I want to hear the summary. People are here and they're following the train of thought. And before we get off of it, I want to hear the summary.
The timing of this release by Pfizer, who is the company claiming to have this vaccine, the timing of this all is very strange. I've read and listened to a lot of different things based on the timing of when this release came out, which was 3 days following the election, on possibilities of why it came out at the time it did.
But wouldn't...
And... Go ahead.
I'm just saying, like I watched the Barstool KFC talking about it, and he made a good point. Like, wouldn't a multi-billion-dollar industry...
That was, like, the last guy I heard talk about it. I was reading about it before, like...
But wouldn't, like, the multi-billion-dollar industry want Trump in power rather than Biden?
No, because they can't influence policy through Trump as easily. You can influence policy with Biden. He's a normal politician. You give him some money and you get your law of whatever you want.
Yeah, there's...
Trump does whatever he can do. He's got the money. You can't just give him money and be like, I want this. He's kind of his own person. But yeah. People were killing Trump for saying, like, vaccine's coming, should be here in the debate. People are like, yeah, whatever, vaccine's coming. Like, you've been saying that.
And but then, so did Biden. Here it is. Biden said that too.
No, Biden, no, Biden did not say that. I thought Biden told Trump, like, you keep saying this or whatever.
Dude, but the reality of that too is the earliest that comes out is third quarter of 2021, which is, okay, what are you going to do? What are all these countries going to do and all these states going to do when there's not even a vaccine? The earliest possible, they say, is third quarter of next year. So there's going to be a lot of, I mean, this debate's been going on for 8 months, as Micah said. Let's get on to some damn volleyball.
Yeah.
I'm tired of thinking of this political talk. We can talk about this for
Jesus.
The past week.
Okay. What do we got? All right. Well, the main thing I thought we were going to talk about is money talks, right? We're going to be talking about. First of all, I want to kind of lead off with the different leagues around the world and the best, kind of the top five, top six leagues. And then we'll kind of get into, okay, how much you get paid, what you expect, kind of thing. Once you're kind of solidified by position, how much money you're making up the charts. So we're going to start with this. The top league, I think we can all agree in the world, money-wise, as a whole, not just one player, as a whole would be Italy. Am I right? So it goes. So Russia. Okay, let's go over the top four leagues in no order. The top four leagues in no order. You have Russia, you have Italy, you have Poland, and then who would you say the last fourth is? Would you say
Brazil?
Are they still going? Because a lot of the Brazilian players are still over here.
It's still going.
Yeah, they're still
so Brazil.
Going.
So you got those are the top four. The top four in the world. Now under that, would you guys say okay? You got Germany. You got France. You got. You can count the Asian leagues too as well. Japan. I don't know how. I'm not really sure how good China is. I know Matt was gonna play there this year. Leagues like that are. Would you say under that? And then anything kind of under that probably isn't the best leagues. Am I right on that? And that's kind of subject there.
Yeah, for sure. I would say those are the top four. And then under that's probably France and Germany. And then under that's another level. But there's some good teams in some good leagues. Like, for example, like Belgium, Mosaic. Like, it's also like there's some Champions League teams that always have pretty good teams. Some teams in Portugal are pretty legit. But yeah, the top four is Italy, Poland, Russia, Brazil. And then under that, the second tier would be France and Germany, I would say. Joe?
So we talked...
Yeah, you nailed the top four. I would even throw Argentina in. I mean,
Argentina's
clubs.
Not playing.
I think they're done.
That's why there's a lot. Oh yeah, no, before for sure. Argentina has some. It has some good volleyball for sure. But I think this year, which is why France has
a lot of Cubans.
So many Argentina players, and Cuban players. Is because they were all in Argentina and that league kind of got shut down.
So for the people wondering about the Japanese, the Asian leagues, so what happens is they get one foreigner. They have a foreigner rule. You get one foreigner, and basically what they do, they have a whole nation filled with liberos, ball control. They pay a big guy. You usually see a big guy or not. Was his name Kubiak on the outside for Panasonic Panthers? He's the Polish outside.
I would just say, like, point scoring people who can score points.
Yeah,
exactly.
But they do get excited about some big boys. So mostly big point scorers.
So how much money? Like, so they get one person. They're basically dumping out a crap ton of money. If you're like a big scorer, right? If you're getting paid top dollar, how much money do you think those guys are making a year?
Well, the Japanese and Korean leagues are on a scale. So the way Micah might have to correct me. I think first year in the league, it starts at like $300,000 plus any bonuses you make through championships, I think.
I think that's right. I think especially for Korea, I think that sounds right. I wish I knew more, but yeah.
Yeah, I think Japan's the same thing. I think they start at like $300,000 or $350,000 a year, which is a ridiculous amount of money for volleyball for anybody who isn't sure about that. That's like a ridiculous amount of money.
And I believe, maybe it's just China. I believe their season's shorter. Which is also, like, China has a short season, man. China has a really
two
short season.
2 months.
So when people are like, how much does this person make a year? It's like, well, he makes this, but he only freaking has to play for 2 months. And he gets to, like, come home and be on vacation or do whatever. Well, I mean, obviously not vacation.
The other thing you see a lot of Euros do is they'll go play China season. Some of them are making close to $1 million, and they'll sign a second contract in, like, an Italian club or Polish club, and they'll come back and play. Or they'll go to the Middle East somewhere and make a ton of money. And so they're picking up, like, two contracts a year, which is ridiculous.
Yeah, so, it's definitely a nice way to go about it. I know Kubiak is making a lot. I think last year, this is all speculation because I have no idea, but last year I heard he was making over $1 million. So
good for him, the Panasonic Panthers.
Anderson is at Shanghai this year. I think he's making $1 million for 2 months of play.
Yeah, it's insane.
That's nuts.
2 months of play is just crazy, man.
It's insane. One.
It's easier when you have a family, too. Like, you have 2 months and you get to spend time with your family anywhere you want. Yeah. Especially when you got $1 million.
If I was a big boy, I would be up in China. I'd be speaking Mandarin by the time.
All types of Mandarin, Cantonese.
Oh, yeah.
I'd be a China
native.
We'll get back to the kind of the main clubs here, but I want to kind of slow down and kind of move back here for a second. So, we're going to put you in your guys' shoes about 2 years ago. Or in my shoes, are going to be the end of the year here, right? Your season ends. You sign an agent, right? You're not allowed to talk to an agent. I mean, I'm not saying that everyone follows this. Like, I've heard definitely people, like big-name players, will definitely be talking to agents before the season's over. Like, you kind of hear murmurings and whatnot. But the season finishes. You sign an agent. Now your agent has to go and find out. Now, it goes by position. I want to kind of go by position and how much each position, who's getting paid the most, who's getting paid the least. Also, I definitely know who gets paid the least, and that's liberos, and that's my line of work right there. So they'll go by point scores, right? So what happens is they're going to start at the lowest. Bam. Libero's not going to score any points, so they're going to pay you the least. The top point scores are usually the right sides international. Correct me if I'm wrong here. Usually no, it's the right side. Usually the right side's getting paid points. The most. And then usually around the two outsides, unless you're Leon, then you're getting paid the most, you know. And
basically your top this year.
Jeez, Leon.
Yeah.
That's nuts.
I would say that opposites are scoring the most points, but when you actually look around, I would say that it's outsides that are getting paid the most. All the top salaries, like Ingepeth, Leon, Kubiak.
But traditionally.
Yeah, I don't know traditionally, but at least right now, I would say the outsides are definitely making the most.
And
at least at the very top levels, I would think. Because there's not too many crazy opposites where, like, Clay Stanley, where, I mean, there definitely is. I'd be interested to know what Sokolov is making at Kazan. But in the world, there's the opposites. Don't get me wrong, there's some insane opposites, but I'd say the top five players in the world, most of them are outsides.
Yeah.
Good point.
Even like Taylor Sander and Matt Anderson plays outside now. Like in Italy, he was playing outside. So yeah, I think a lot of the people making the most at the moment are outsides.
Okay, so we got the lowest being libero's.
We're not far behind you.
Setters and so, yeah, and so middles. I was about to say, so middles and setters, let's say if you have the best middle in the world, the best setter in the world, who's getting paid more?
Setter?
Setter, for sure. The guy who touches the ball. I mean,
okay.
Touches the ball in a sec. The top paid, I know the top paid setter this year in Italy is Gianelli. He's making $350,000.
And I heard that Simone was making, like, almost close to that in Lube.
But Simone...
I am not the guy to be talking about this. I know nothing about this, but you're going to hear what I've heard, and we're all going to be on the same page after this, so you can look forward to that. Just all speculation. You hear what I hear, and maybe it becomes more true because we spread the rumor.
So once you're a solidified player, I mean, you're not getting thrown this. I mean, once you come out of college or you're a new player, typically you're not getting thrown this amount of money. So let's say if you're coming out of college, right, and your guy's position, if you get signed, like Germany and France, still really, really good clubs, you're making what? Like around 50, a little under 50,000 or something like that? I mean, how much? I mean,
I would say anywhere from number 20 to 50.
20 to 50. And then how long does
it take? If you're a setter. Yeah, if you're a setter and like you're probably in France or Germany. Yeah.
Now I know. Like if you're like TJ, if you're like a big point scorer, you get signed to Italy. You can make it. I think he's making a couple hundred thousand. If I'm not wrong, or around 100,000.
No, yeah, TJ's contract's a lot higher than the rest of us. It's a lot, a lot higher.
Combined, probably. Yeah. Still.
Yeah. I'll tell you what. I'm not spotting him ever. Ever. It's not like, hey, you know, I'll take care of this one. Maybe you'll take the next one. That is not happening.
So for libero, you can make your first year under $10,000 for sure, yeah?
Under 10? I have no idea.
I know for a fact, especially with coronavirus, I am going to be in the middle of nowhere next year making no money. But the trip, the experience would be gonna be so fun. Like I'm so excited.
Oh, it is.
Making like no money, but it's so fun.
Just the beginning of any journey is like those grinding it out days are like that starting at the bottom is just so sweet. There's nothing like it. There's nothing like it. You'll never get to recreate that.
It makes things like way sweeter once you.
Yeah, and you look back at it and you realize that you were having a lot of fun too back then. Like, it's just how it works.
It's not as serious. We're not as. But
yeah. You
but
just
so you come out of college. So you come out of college and you're making like what $30,000-$50,000, and then in the next, or if you're a high point scorer, you can sign a pretty big contract. But again, as you, how long is it? I mean, people move up the charts, within 2-3 years. Sometimes people they take longer than that. Now you're kind of a solidified player. And you're making a lot of money getting signed to those top deals. And again, how it goes is libero, you're making the least. I know Grebennikov and I heard Eric, they're making around like $100,000 too a year.
More. Yeah, those
more than that.
Yeah, those guys are legit.
Wow.
If I was an owner of a club in Russia, I would sign both of those guys. They would be one of my foreigners. It just makes so much sense. Like, I could find point scorers in Russia. Like, it's like trying to find a libero in Japan. It's like, yeah, I can find that. But, dude, someone like Eric, you're not going to find that. And
that's true.
That first touch is in Russia with guys that are bombing. Like, yeah, that's good point. That's where I that's what makes sense to me, at least. If
dude, there's owners, a good chance, just looking at Eric's roster, that he's making more than some of his points. Like, some of the guys who are...
Yeah, it could be score. True.
Shout out to Eric out there. Represent the liberos.
Yeah, guys, just hell shows. Yeah. If you're... But, I mean, Eric is something special.
Yeah. He's... So. I mean, he's worth every penny for sure. You know, you see him. He's absolutely diming balls.
He's worth more.
Eric just
like, so, again, libero at the bottom. Then probably around middles or so. Well, if you're really good middle, you can be up there, too.
Yeah, middles or setters.
And then it goes to your top point scorers, outside, right side. Typically, like you said, the outside, because they got to kind of do everything. But that's basically what you should expect as a professional volleyball player. But then again, there's people who've been in the professional volleyball leagues for like 10 years and aren't making that much money. But I know that they definitely, let's say if you're 10 years in the league, right, or 9 years in the league, and Joe, you kind of experienced this too with older players. I don't know about you, Micah, because Joe was full with the older players last year, not this current year. But let's say if you have a guy who's 9 year, right, and you have a guy who's just coming in, and they're equally as good, they're going to sign the 9 year guy. I mean, I guess it's not, even if it's on two, like, even if the young guy's like 2 years in, like the 9 year guy is like, this is my minimum value. I'm only working here and then higher.
Yeah.
Am I right?
Yeah. Yeah.
Dude, I was having a I had a conversation with Nicolas Marichal this week, actually. He's an outside player from France. He is an Olympian from Rio Olympics. He's no longer with the national team, but he's played pretty much every country in the world. Russian league, bunch of different Asian leagues, Italy. Like I said, he's an Olympian. But he's telling me, because he's like one of those, he's exactly what you're just talking about, one of those players where he's physically not much taller than me, to be honest, like maybe a couple inches. And he's older, so he doesn't jump very well. And he just is a little bit slower than he ever used to be. But he was telling me, he's like, literally clubs will pay way more for me just for my mentality alone. Obviously his experience, he's played everywhere. But just his mentality, he's just a competitor, you see in practice. In the first hour and a half when we're not doing 6-on-6, I mean, I'll admit, like, sometimes he's just kind of, like, going through. But as soon as the 6-on-6 comes, like, he's like, figured out just a way to win. Even if he's not, like, feeling good that day, he'll just always... And you know having him on your team is... And so clubs pay for that. Like, especially, like, an experienced club like Friedrichshafen, where they're playing Champions League, they pay for that experience level. So I think for sure that was... It's funny you brought that up because... I was just talking to him about that this week.
Yeah, it's totally a thing.
I'm gonna go in. I just thought about that. That's actually kind of sick. Just, I remember I've gotten spots on a team just because I yell so much. I was playing god awful, absolutely god awful, and it works. But there's one point, Joe, when I was saying like, some guys come in with a minimum $75,000 or higher. I'm gonna come in my first year. I'm not working for under $5,000 or over. That's it. They're like, all right, $5,000 is the bar's like super low.
And then it's like, what helps the person like to explain to people, because playing volleyball is not like a lucrative thing in most situations. Yeah. But what does help you out is that it's also like you have no expenses. So $30,000 looks a lot different in the U.S. versus living in Europe, playing for a professional team, because you don't have to pay for your rent, you don't have to pay for your car, you don't have to pay for insurance, you don't have to pay for medical, you don't have to pay for a lot of things. You're just pretty much just buying groceries and gas, and then on top of that, whatever you want. So I think it does come out to, like, I was talking to Dylan Mystery, who stopped playing and is working in like finances and is a really smart guy actually, and I was like, how much do you think like a player making $100,000 overseas, how much do you think that's worth in New York? And Dylan's like, you're in New York, you got to make like, and this is just spitballing, but he's like, that's probably worth like 200, like it's probably worth double or even more. Because even like taxes, I know we pay our taxes differently. And in Europe, the club pays your taxes for you outside of your contract. So all those kinds of things add up a little bit. And you end up kind of being able to bring some money home. And some players are smart about it and make some good investments. And so you can do it, but you're not playing in the NBA.
Yo, Gage, you just talked about investments. What would be like the first thing that you would invest in? Your first couple contracts you get. What's something you invest in, Gage?
Are you saying like real estate, or are you saying like an item?
That's what I'm asking you.
Dude, there's a lot of stuff I'd invest in. The first I've been looking up this white shark, this GoPro like submarine thing. It's like $500, and basically it's kind of like a submarine thing. I don't know, or something like that. Or I'd buy a couple propeller Taco Bells.
Where you hold on to it?
No, and yeah, it propels you hold you? On, and you just.
Oh, fucking, that's legit.
There's like three modes to it and whatnot. And I was like, oh, for sure, I'd go. Like, I'm taking my fins and I'm taking my diving gear to Europe when I go. Like 100%. Off days, I plan on just going.
Where are you going?
I don't know. I probably gotta get a wetsuit because it's the Atlantic Ocean.
Wait, what?
Yeah, 100%.
Where do you think you're gonna be?
Okay,
I've been looking up body surfing spots, and I'll probably make a video when I do this for sure. Traveling across Europe to go like body surfing, like I've been looking at spots like body surfing spots, the best in Europe, and I was like, if I have a couple off days, like find the cheapest.
You know what?
Way to
I'll join
down.
You. What? I'll join you. I will join you.
Yeah. The thing is, Gage, one off day, I'm just gonna go hop over to Portugal or like.
No. I'm saying if I had a there's gonna
you're
be days
gonna be,
we have like
dude,
three
you're
or
gonna
four
be
days
in
off.
Like Finland, and you're not, or you're gonna be somewhere that's Finland's actually would be doable. But
Finland's pretty far north.
No, I mean it's gonna be cold, but you could be close to the
water. Ailsworth, who just signed here in Germany, he told me he got to the North Pole last year. It was easily accessible from where he was in Finland. So
that's a stone's throw away, the North Pole.
I will make my way. Mark my words on this. I'm taking Santa's sleigh and I'm getting to Portugal to go body surfing.
You should body surf, like, at the North Pole.
I'm bringing all my gear.
Any sort of waves over there. The waves probably come from some sort of
I would
of
have
wildlife.
To travel, but I'm bringing, like, I have, like, 12 board shorts. I'll bring, like, a majority of them. I'm bringing all my suits. Like, I'm planning this all out already. I'm bringing all my suits, and I'm wearing them to every game day. If we have a season this year, I will be bringing absolute fire to the games. That's all I gotta say. I had about 8 suits
in there
that I couldn't use. Now, Joe, we talked about money. So if anyone has any other questions about money, again, just DM us, hit us up. And again, we'll probably answer at the end of the show with our advice. But that's for the end of the show. Joe.
Once Gage is making his millions next year.
Yeah, once I'm making my millions in Finland with Santa Claus. We kind of want to talk about how you deal with failure and losses, and since, I mean, a lot of these top players, I mean, it's different, especially when you're a pro player and just kind of different levels of your career. Like, if you lose, like, again, you're getting paid to win, you know what I'm saying? Like, so it's a whole different mentality to kind of adopt when you're in that situation. So we kind of wanted to discuss how you deal with failure and losses. I know Joe had a few things to say about this.
Yeah, well, I think only Gage and I can speak because Micah never has lost or has failed.
Ever. Micah never loses, dude.
Well,
no, what's
so
it like?
Much thing, recently.
So the one thing.
In five?
One thing. The
After
one thing
I'm
we can
18
all,
years old, all I've done is lost.
Join the club.
Lose. Sorry, not all I've
done. Dude, the one thing we all can relate on is, I think most people listen know that all three of us have lost in a national championship match. And for me, my collegiate career, to be honest, Gage talked about this. Even in my senior year, like, the losses stick out way more than big wins to me. Like, the losses always stick out way more to me for some reason. And it's, like, the tough losses in situations where it's just... For me, I never like living with regret. And I say this in any, like, action, individual action in a match or whatever. Like, I will never regret being aggressive in any situation. Like, if I go and I try to, like, make an aggressive play on a ball and I make an error here, like, I personally am never gonna regret that. And so for me, I know with failure in individual actions, if I'm being aggressive and I'm trying to, I like make good decisions, I just don't execute or something. Like, I'm not totally fine with it. Obviously, I'm pissed off at myself, but I can like live with that. If I go and I tip a ball in the middle of the court or something, or tip a ball to a libero and they transition, bounce the ball, or like do something that isn't just like a volleyball IQ play, that drives me nuts more than anything. And for me, I think that's all like mental preparation. So for me, like, so dealing with failure and losses has always been super different for me, because I always need a little bit of time to kind of, if I reacted right away sometimes, especially when I'm playing, I realize it when I'm playing with my brother even more so. Like, if I say something, or like if Gade is around me and I react right away, like I'll regret what I say later, just because I'm like pissed off. I just need to like take a little bit of time sometimes, because I just over, like, I just get so frustrated. And for me, even this summer, Gage and I, we played in a co-ed tournament and we lose this game. It's like a co-ed tournament. It doesn't even like mean much, but we lose it. And I was so frustrated. Alpaca. Gage and I just had to go on a walk. Gage and I had to go on a walk and we just had to talk, because like it just drives me nuts just to lose at all. And so for me, I always handle losses and failure just by like, I need to take a break. And my dad actually taught me that. I don't know, Micah, for you. I can't even remember if you've ever lost the game at all, but
dude, guys, come on. Shut up. I don't know. I lost so much games. I lost to you guys like the last three times I played you, I feel like. Oh wait, we didn't play my senior year.
We didn't play
drama. No, you guys didn't want to play.
Oh, that's a hot topic. Now that is a hot topic.
That was
I talked to both sides and it was like, no, it was you.
Both Dude. Sides say it was the other.
Oh, my and word.
The thing Dude, is, it is. The thing is, listen. It wasn't the players who didn't want to play each other.
No.
That was not the issue. It was not the players who had the issue.
No, it was not.
We got to get – I want to get someone on here and be like, okay, what actually happened? Because I talked to
you. You need a Keller on here, bro.
Yeah. What actually happened?
Yeah,
Micah. But
we should actually get Keller on here to talk about like coaching us when we were kids. That'd be that would be a really, really cool little segment.
Maybe
I'd like to know what he thought about us, or I mean, maybe he didn't even think about us. But yeah, that'd be
interesting. Dude, I'll hit or one of us could hit him up. I think that'd be really
that'd be interesting.
Actually.
Yeah, that'd be cool. What was the losses and failure? No, I'm with you, dude. I'm with you. It's completely different if your losses and failure, you went down swinging, or if you like made the safe play or like a scared play. Those are so different to me. I don't really, if I'm aggressive, I really could care less. Just
exactly,
like,
dude.
It's like if I rip it and if I make a mistake, I'll be super frustrated that I made the mistake, but I'm not frustrated at myself as like, if I make, if I do something tentatively, oh, it's so tough to deal with. I actually, my last game, made some mistakes in some crucial times. And, man, you really do learn so much more from your losses. Like, that's what just keeps progressing you forward. At the same time, I am, like, somebody who believes that, like, winning is a skill. And you need to like practice that in everything you do. That's why in practice it's so important to like Marcel does. It's like you just need to learn how to win, because it is a thing that you can learn how to do, and like it doesn't have to go the same way, but there are some common denominators I think that help players win a lot. And right now in this point in my career, I'm not sure what it is as much as I was as a kid. Right now I'm still trying to navigate and trying to find like, okay, what does winning look like at this level? Because I haven't gotten to do it, and I haven't gotten to do it at the university level either. So it's just about trying to find like those things that just, all right, I just want to win. How do I do that? And it's completely a skill. But the losses definitely push you forward. Wins you learn, and losses you learn more. I actually watched, I think, 10 games of Bruno on Volumetrics after my loss, because we were in quarantine, and I just took notes, and I think super grateful for that last loss, because it just you learn, like, it can even flip your whole mindset on things. And I learned a ton. And even after like 10 days off, my first practice back, I felt like I played really well, which is usually rare for me. But I've been happy with it. And yeah, so you just, you're pissed. You deal with it later on. At least I do. I really, like, I'm just pissed and like, oh. And I kind of am like the guy that Gage doesn't like. I'm like, man, I played so bad. Like,
God, yeah, but you don't do it so for bad. I would still hate you. Don't get me wrong.
No, and you're totally. I didn't even think about that. You're totally fine by saying that. I don't even know if that's what I'm doing. It could even be that I'm looking for attention. I have no idea. But I am quietly vocal about that. Like, if somebody was to talk to me about it, I'd be like, no, I did not play good. Like, I did not play good.
No, yeah,
I wouldn't just. I wouldn't be like
a fan comes up to you or something.
Right. So, oh yeah, but you like have that period of like just anger and like, and then you have that period of like learning from it, I'd hope. Or you can just move on if it, but I hope you have a period of learning from it. And then you just keep like going and trying to win.
Oh, sorry. I didn't mean to cut you off there.
No, but go. I'm done.
There's always this period of like anger, like at the end, like you said, where like if you get like throttled, you're more angry when you lose a close one than if you get like throttled. Luckily, I'm lucky enough to say that there's very few times where I've been throttled in my career.
Bro, if you get there throttled, have been times, you just laugh about it.
Yeah, honestly. Yeah, exactly. Like, you're like, bro, we suck, bro. Like, damn, we're ass. Like, and like, it's way easier to bounce back when you get throttled. Way easier. Well, yeah,
because also because you can't point. This is something that's you can't point to specific plays if you get throttled. It's like the whole thing was bad. But like after you're like, if you lose a close one, you're like, oh, that one ball. I shouldn't have done that on that one ball. But if it's like 25-10, it's like, you're not gonna be like, oh, every ball. You're just gonna be like, oh, whatever.
We got killed by BYU. It was Milan and Ratto. He's like, yeah, we played like freaking girls out there. We just went over there, pulled our pants down, bent over, and then left. And that's how the match went. I love when you lose talking to Eastern Europeans because they
are the best.
It's the funniest thing ever.
Oh, I'm
like,
sure.
And they'll just, like, make fun of you the rest of the night. That's your life, honestly. It's the best. Oh, man. So those
Gage, how do you handle stuff, Gage? I was going to ask how you handle it.
It can get bad. Like I'm a very chill person. I'm like, okay, learn. Like, there was times where if I didn't even play well at practice, I could be like, this is before I kind of solidified myself. But, like, there would be times where if I didn't play well, I'd, like, be depressed, like, for a while. I didn't show it, but, like, it can definitely grow on you. You know, you, like, watch film yourself, and you're just like, you know. I'm serious, dude. I'm serious. Luckily. Dude,
losing in practice makes me mad. But I was laughing. I'm pissed off until the next practice. If I lose in practice.
There's nothing worse. I swear, there's nothing worse than, like, losing the last drill, and then the coach being like, okay, that's it. We're going home. Like, or lose. No, we need to play another one.
Or like losing a short court, dude, before practice. That's the worst. Like,
I need to fix this, but I get so much more into and pumped up for like the stupidest games.
Yeah.
Like, if it's like one on one, like I find myself like even more upset losing one on one than like
because it's
an actual game.
It's like fighter. It's like when you're fighting 1v1, you know what I'm saying?
Yeah, that's kind of like, true. Yeah, that's true.
But when I handle losses, it's – I handle it pretty well now, usually. And like last year, we won, but I wasn't playing well, you know what I'm saying? So it was like a combination of – at least we're winning. Like, so like my errors and my messing up didn't – like wasn't highlighted. Only when we like – again, we lost to like BYU and like – we lost a lot at Long Beach, like that stuff. Like, I'm kind of a guy like, okay, just I need a second, and then I'll bounce back. Unless your season's over after, then I'm not gonna bounce back so quick. But yeah, I just bounce back. You know, it's like, okay, here we go, time to go again. Cause I know I have like, it's so much easier being more confident player and like a skilled player. Luckily, I've reached that level where I'm like confident myself. Where it's like, okay, you have it in you. Like, you look at film, look at all this stuff. Like, you can learn from it, but like, Don't try and change too much because your natural, I mean, maybe it's different as a setter because you've got to really game plan a lot more. But like your natural, like, okay, they're gonna hit me here more. They hit this in situation. Learn from that. But like your natural intuition and like your natural, just how you play the game. It's like you know you're at that level. You just got to reach it. And if you overthink it and you overplay it in your head, this is for me at least, then you're going to mess yourself up even more. There's no need. But sometimes I need a kick in the ass. I remember first night versus Long Beach, my sophomore year, we lost. And I was so – and I've never been so, like, intense, so just angry at a serving pass because I didn't – I felt like I got aced too much. Or one ace is too much, let alone, like, two or three, you know, in a five-setter. And I remember I was getting aced, and I was so mad at – and I just, like yell at myself and so mad at the next serving pass that Josh Walker literally had to take me in front of the team and yell at me. He's like, if this is your attitude, okay, fine. But you don't act like this every serving pass. Like, if you're going to do this, okay, then do it for the rest of the time. This is not, like, who you are. This is, like, what are you doing right now? And, like, stuff like that. And it kind of put me in my place, and that's definitely something I needed at the time. But I think that the key is just to kind of know, be confident in yourself. People kind of overcomplicate things. It's like, it's just volleyball, man. Like, just go out there. It's just volleyball. You know, you have it in you. Don't try and, like, no, just play. Just play. And that's kind of my advice.
That's a really good mindset to have. I think I've – Joe, tell me if – maybe you guys are just better at this than me. I think I've continuously gotten where it's – everything's just more complicated. And I think that has helped and hurt. And I want to know what you guys think about that. What do you think about that, Joe?
You're talking from, like, a skill basis or,
From everything. Just like volleyball in general, like complicating volleyball and your thoughts about the game and like learning as you learn more about it or as you learn more about like even like
user and pro
people dynamics level. And all this stuff.
Well, I know for me, I would say just from knowing you and playing with you, both of you, you're both the same way. I could be wrong about this, but I always like when I'm free and I'm just kind of flowing, I play way better. And the best I played in college was when literally Charlie told me at the beginning of the season, like, it's your offense, you do what you want with it. You have freedom to kind of be creative, do what you want. And that's when I played best because I'm like, okay, like, then I can really think I'm open. I'm not thinking about, oh, will the coach be mad if I set this guy in this situation? Like, at the beginning, Charlie was a little more like that with me. And I was, like, always, like, thinking, oh. And even I think... Like, at the professional level, it's a little more – I think it depends on the coach, but it's a little bit like that. Like, because me being the younger setter right now, they're a little bit more like that where they want to kind of, like, have their reins on the setter and, like, they're less likely to just kind of, like, release you to go do what you want. And for me, I know personally as a player and just, like, me getting the team to play better is when I'm kind of free-flowing and stuff and – I'm not as worried about, like, what is the coach going to think in this situation? Or what is this guy thinking in this situation? Like, I completely know what's best for each guy in each situation, what they like doing, what the other team's doing. I'm not worried about anything outside of the court. And so I 100% agree. Like, even when I was younger, like, we both played for our dads. I think they have a good understanding that my brother and I, like, my dad knows that we know what to do, we know how to execute, and he kind of like in the big matches he let us go. Like in training he worked us hard. In the big matches he knows, he trusts that we're gonna make the right decisions. He's not gonna be like overbearing. I think for you, I'm sure your dad is the same way.
Not so much. My dad is just too much of a disciplinarian. He didn't let anybody do their own thing ever.
And I mean, I'm not saying my dad, like, he, if we were in the right position, he'd be on our ass. But I'm saying in terms of, like, the offense and stuff, like, the creative parts of volleyball for us, well, I know my brother and I, we play best when that's just kind of, like, we're given the freedom, like, in the, like, the creative aspects of it. Because eventually, like, we've played for so long that we have a really good understanding of the decisions that we have to make. And we've been in so many different situations. It's still, like, you and I are still so young in our pro careers. We have so much to learn now at this level. You hit, kind of hit it right on point where you were talking about, like, every level you start from zero. I think somebody mentioned that earlier. And for me, it's 100%. Like, I'm learning even new stuff now at the professional level. But that creativity and the feeling for the game, I don't think will ever leave. And I think that in order to for me to be at my best, the kind of freedom part is what I need as a player. And the coaches that have given that to me have found that I've played my best and I've gotten the team to play their best when I'm given that.
For sure.
That's deep. I think I mean, we discussed it on past shows, but like, you need, in order to be successful, right, no matter how strict of a coach you are, I feel like you need to give a lot of your players creativity, especially like your leading guy, your quarterback in any sport, no matter what it is. Well, I think that's what makes it. Yeah, 100%. And sort of like respect, and then that they feel respected, they feel trusted, and so they're loose and kind of going out there. But I think hopefully we all answered the questions to the best of our ability. So when you're dealing with tough losses or whatnot, just know what got you there to that point. Just keep it going. Learn from your mistakes, like Micah, coming with the mentality like Joe, pissed off from the day earlier. Or stay chill, like myself. Three different kind of ways of handling.
That's the best way to do it. That's the best way to do it. Not
always.
I used to be so good at
that,
but man, I changed a lot. So.
But you don't want to get – I got to a point, remember, where – in practice, I was too chill, where I was like too nonchalant. I was like, yeah, you're getting too much on yourself. Just kind of relax. To the point, kid, chill out. You're getting too crazy. I got mad after one point. I'm like, dude, it's getting bad, bro. No, and then I was way too nonchalant. I was just cruising back there, like, and I was horrible. But just kind of find your way of handling stuff. Make sure you learn from it is the biggest kind of thing we can kind of share from today. Now, Joe, we have some advice questions. Again, if you want to be featured on this, just DM us. Hit us up. You know how it be. Joe, hit
people
us.
People are coming back to us for advice.
Dude, yeah.
Dude, we had DMs. Sir. We had people DMing us because they were listening to the pod, and we said it for a DM, so they DM'd us. Like we asked, so we're going through. We got Corey Johnson here. He is 17, and he just fell in love with volleyball in the past year, it sounds like. And he lives in Kansas. I'm sorry for chuckling at that. But Kansas, I can understand why this is a tough situation for you. He wants to play in college. He's already a senior in high school and already missed club tryouts. So he's been playing in local leagues and stuff. Any things on stuff for him to work on, as well as like advice for playing further past high school? And I have something to say about this. I don't know if you guys
no go go Joe
in your mind right away.
Go ahead.
The first thing for me is I've always told this, because we've said this several times, our family works, we run a volleyball academy, so we get questions like this all the time. And for everybody, there's a way to play at the next level. If you want to, there's a way to do it. I mean, obviously there's a difference in levels and stuff and avenues in which to go, but there's plenty of collegiate programs. Like, I would say most universities have a collegiate men's volleyball or a club collegiate men's volleyball program. And so there is a way to play in college. There are avenues to go play. For somebody this new to the game, I don't know who's been your coach. I mean, I'll have to admit, I'm sure these two will agree that 17, that is kind of an old, like, to play at the next level, that's kind of an old age to start at. But serve and receive, hundreds, like, those are the two most important skills in volleyball at any level. Serve and receive. If you're asking for what stuff to work on, if you can serve and pass decently, then you can play on a lot of different teams. And so, playing at the next level, we haven't seen any video or anything, but there's always avenues to go play. Just ask people around. Being from Kansas, there's a lot of women's volleyball players and girls volleyball players in that area. But plenty of people who know kind of the volleyball world will be able to direct you in the right way. But the thing is, just play. At the bottom line, you just need to play, like, and not overthink things. Just, the more you play, the more touches you get, the more advancements you make. Easy. Easy does it. I don't know if you guys have anything else to add on to that.
You answered that perfectly.
No, yeah, that's good for me. Just keep playing and keep working your way up.
We'll go two more here, because we've been getting some good combos in here. So we're going to be going with David Schreiber here. We got a DM from him. Really quickly, he wanted to ask, in terms of related to high-level hitting, he said, advice on toing the block, swinging past the block, and recycling the play. What are some things that, like, the key kind of points in those different actions? I think Micah.
Wopaka. Let's go to the Wopaka legend.
Me? What do you got for us, Gage? Yeah, you.
Gage, you're the Wopaka legend, bro.
I didn't swipe at all. I just bobbed away. I mean, sometimes I jumboed, you know, because I jumbo and bob.
Yes, sir.
Two of the always blocks gotta mean keep that pass jumbo the block in the and recycling the play.
Okay.
Well, the reason I feel like I tooled the block is because I have a pretty live fat, like pretty gnarly arm swing. It's coming from the left, from the outside, so it's a little different, and I just kind of do crazy stuff with it. So what do I do when I'm tooling the block? Wow, as a libero, I never thought I'd get this question, so I'm very flattered for dishing it off to me, Joe.
That was me.
I don't know. I feel like a lot of people. You hear a lot of times, right? Pro players are so smart, and I think this is the reason why is they know their opponent against them. Like, you don't need to, like, study film to kind of realize what kind of guy this is. After a couple swings, for example, some guys, he's reaching super, super high, and you got to tool him another way or one other way. Like, some guys, like, they just try and do the same thing over and over again, you know, with the same blockers, the same defenders. And I feel like, okay, you know your people in front of you. You know what he's going to do, so I have to kind of find different ways. And it's kind of different ways to kind of chisel. But for me, it's not like I look. I mean, you can kind of see. I can't give you, like, specifics because I am not really a hitter. I feel like Michael would be better in answering this question. But the biggest thing I know is, like, when I talk to my hitters, I'm like, hey, he's going to do this here. He's going to do this here. So aim for this kind of gap right here. So knowing what's going on and then getting communication from your back row to kind of help you. Always got to throw love to the back row, the liberos back there. But, Mike, I feel like you can answer this question a whole lot better than I can.
Okay. So the question, Joe, is how to tool people, how to recycle, and how to hit past the block.
Hit past the block, yeah.
Okay, well, hitting past the block, I think part of it is kind of like it's just you got to work on your vision. To work on your vision, I think you just have to make sure that the ball's not behind you. If the ball's behind you, your head goes up, and you start looking back instead of forward, and you can't see the block at all. So to keep the ball in front of you helps to be able to see the block at least. Also getting on it fast, like Gage said. I know Milan talks about this. But like the speed of your jump, yeah, actually helps a lot. So getting on it fast, hitting on the way up, that kind of stuff, especially if you're going angle, helps you kind of beat the block and get the ball past the block. In terms of tooling, that's another thing that Milan's super good at. It's like hitting it into the block super fast, not letting them be really clean, and then just hitting the edges of the block. I know Austin Matautia got really good at this. I think it was like halfway through the year. I talked to him. I was like, dude, just start hitting just hit the edges of the block at like 80%. And this guy ended up hitting in the last three games before he got hurt, which was gnarly injury. I think he was hitting like 480 or something near 500 in the last three games. And he was just like hitting it soft into the edges of the block and just getting a lot of easy kills like that. And then recycling the ball into the block is something I think actually I would like to challenge people at this. I think I've got to be one of the better ones because my back got thrown out my sophomore year. And I would tell them, like, I cannot hit. And people would still give me the ball. And so in practice, I would just hit it into the block every single time. Or I would set it into the block and just get the ball back and, like, try and pass a free ball and be like, set the middle. And, like, just tell them, do not give me the ball. Like, I couldn't hit. My back was too messed up. I think what helps me, one specific thing about it is to add topspin to the ball. When I started to add topspin to it, the ball comes back a lot easier to replay. Some guys hit it in flat. I have no idea why. The ball like hits the block and goes straight down or dies. And nobody can cover a ball that's like straight. It's like ridiculous. I'm like, what are you guys doing?
Cover me!
Or they tip it.
That's the best.
They cover tip me. It into the block like softly. And I'm like, what are you guys doing? Like, you got to put a little bit of pace in it so that the block can't control the touch.
Yeah.
Like, if you put it soft enough, I'm going to slam it down. So adding topspin into when you hit it against the block, it's weird, but the ball kind of like rolls up off them and can come back a lot easier to play back. And then obviously vision. You have to see where the block is, wait for them to form, and then go into it. You can't beat them. You can't go fast and play it into the block or else they're going to touch it and it's going to go, I don't know where. So yeah, let the block form, wait for it, hit it on the way down, and add topspin, and it should be a good cover.
Cover me! Yeah, I love those guys. The cover me guys after they get blocked straight down.
Just when people try to replay it and they do it in the oddest way, and I'm like, God, dude, have you not realized that does not work? They're like, yeah, I was going for a plate into block. Oh, okay, got it. That's what you're going for.
All right, so we got two quick ones here because one of our people here on Instagram answered. Two people said we answered their questions, but they're two short questions. One is referring to what I talked about last week in terms of jump training, the resistance, assistance, and then just kind of like normal jump training. Asking if I did different days each or if I cycled those through. That for me, I was doing that 3 days a week, and I would do it all three would be on all three of those days. So I do it all together. It was part of the program. It was like a cycle. And I would do all that at the same day. Maybe I'll put together a video here. If people are really interested in that, DM us. Maybe I can put together a video.
Shout out Eric Shoji. Eric Shoji texted me before this podcast just now and inquired about our the jump training.
He's trying to get more explosive. Really?
Yeah.
Eric is trying to get... Oh,
he's just trying to get more explosive.
Maybe I should look into that.
Yeah, dude, just follow that guy's lead.
Wait, he texted about what we were talking about or just...
Yeah. He was just like, hey, Micah, like you think that's the most important thing for jump training? And I was like, yeah, I think it definitely is the most important. I think it gets supplemented by like weights, but I think the most important, like I told him, that actually would help my vertical the most for young players out there is dunking. Practicing dunking helped me so much. I had a rim that I could go up and down on when I was young, and I would do that, and then just always trying to be raising the rim. And then when I got to 10 feet, I would like touch the rim, like run up to it, touch the rim like 10 times as hard as I could. And then I'd grab a tennis ball like a month later and try and dunk a tennis ball and then move up to a softball and then move up to a volleyball. And that for sure was by far the best thing I've ever done for my jump.
Right on. All right, Micah, we got one last question for you. We might have answered this sort of, but I guess not completely. I don't know if we have. When you played with us at Pac Rim, our junior club volleyball, for anybody who doesn't know, that's the club that our family runs. Micah came and played his last year with us. How often would you fly to California from Hawaii to train with us? And how long would you stay in California? So I think that's a pretty easy question. Micah will explain fast here.
Yeah, no, I went one time. I didn't do back and forth. I went one time in the summer. Just before, we had, what is it? Like this,
like beginning of June,
ASC?
The Anaheim
for the
like,
SCBA, for the
Anaheim tournament. And then for nationals. So I was there. So,
yeah.
I got there in the beginning of June and we played nationals. What is it? July 4th.
Yeah. First week, pretty much a month. He just came.
Yeah, I was there. I think for a month.
Balled out.
And so that's kind of how that went. Easy answer that. Again, if you have more stuff, please DM us. Hit us up. We're going to finish off here. We're going to roll rapid fire. Pick them. Gage is in the lead now.
What's the score?
By 5 points.
Wow. You got
so... I just have the plus minus. I just keep track of the plus minus. I'm up by 3 points on Micah.
Oh, my
God. Micah, you're not super far behind.
Yeah,
sure. But you are. But, like,
dude,
all you need is one big weekend. One big weekend. Okay, we have, in order to supplement this, Micah, I put in 4 matches this week. Really rapid fire, though. You get 3 seconds to give me an answer, and we're going to roll with it. So, we're going to get going here.
Gage is first.
Gage is always first, of course. For Gage, we're starting in the Brazil League, because I have to start off by saying there's a lot of leagues that are postponed right now. There's so many matches that are getting postponed, so it's hard to find like big matches.
Brazil.
I did the best that I could. Gage, we got Sada Cruzeiro in the Brazilian league versus Minas. I think it's Minas.
Sada Cruzeiro for sure. 3-0. Not even close.
3-0. Okay, I'm gonna go Minas 3-1.
I'm going Sada 3-1.
Okay. Khan Toulouse, yeah? Is that how you pronounce it? Toulouse? Yep. Khan Toulouse Gage.
What?
Khan and Toulouse.
Oh, I thought it was Khan Toulouse was one name. Like, who are they playing? Khan v. Toulouse.
That shows how informed he is on this.
I know, hey. I'm just making myself look like an idiot. But I'm in the lead, boys. I go Khan 3-2.
Okay. I'm going to go...
For personal reasons.
I'm going to go Khan 3-1.
Is it in Khan?
Shout out Taylor April. Is it the first one's home, yeah?
Yeah.
It's in Khan.
Yeah, I'll go Khan 3-2.
Ooh, all right. Hershing Lüneburg, German League, baby. It's a big match in the German League, actually.
I'm going Lüneburg for sure. 3-2.
Gage's brother-in-law, shout out. Okay, got this it. Match is in Hershing. Hershing is one of the top, I'd say, three places in our league to play in, or hardest places to play in. So I'm going to go Hershing, actually, 3-1. I'm going to give Lüneburg one set.
I'm going Lüneburg 3-1. Come on, Jordan. Come on, Dalt.
3-1 in Hershing. Now, that's going to be tough, I will admit. But last but not least, another German game. This is like this is another big one, actually. It'll have a lot of to determine a lot at the end of the season. Düren and Frankfurt. Gage.
Frankfurt, because I love the hot dogs. Frankfurt
3-0. That's where they're from. That's actually where they're from.
I know. I've done my research.
It's in Düren. I'm going to say Düren wins this 3-0.
I'm going Düren 3-1.
All right, that's the picks.
Wrong.
That's the pickup. We'll see. Yeah. Who's got the magic this week?
Yes, sir. Joe, it's kind of funny. You said that Lüneburg was the top three place, hardest place to play in Germany. I was like, you guys are the hardest place because you guys literally don't have a gym. Like, literally the hardest place to play.
They show up.
They got to find a gym. Like, literally, it's hard to play there because you got to find something. Hard to play in this freak shop. Alright, guys. Just if you're listening to this, keep in mind, if you can't handle the heat, get out of the damn kitchen. This has been another episode presented by Out of System.